Hey folks, it's your boy BC doing a bit of a cold open here before getting into the meat and potatoes of this episode, which is going to be discussing Raw and Nitro from January 22nd, 1996, as well as Clash of Champions 32 that happened on January 23rd of 1996. But before doing so, I wanted to touch on something that is non-wrestling related, but is definitely affecting myself and Jay at the moment. For you, those of you that may be aware, and I'm sure a lot of you are not aware, both myself and Jay are located in Nova Scotia. And if you've seen some of the trends on the hashtags lately for Nova Scotia on Twitter and social media and all that stuff, you might be aware that there's currently some wildfires going on here in Nova Scotia, which, trust me, there's wildfires going on all across the country and in the United States and all over the world, but we're not traditionally a place that deals with that. We deal with the other side of it, which is the hurricanes and flooding and rain and stuff like that, and especially not used to dealing with it this soon into, we're not even to the summer yet. It's May here, but it's certainly been kind of a, I'll say it's been a bit of a scary time for us both. And so just in case there was people wondering about us, I know there's been a few people that reached out on social media, and I really do appreciate the folks that did. I know for myself, I really have been using social media at all, except just to check on the status of the wildfire situation here. And I gotta say a big props to one account on there. It's called @HRM Fire News, and it's Halifax Fire News, and they're just doing a phenomenal job of updating people, not just updating people, but not going with the drama, not going with rumors or any of this stuff, just giving the basic information that people require to keep update on, and doing it almost sometimes on a minute by minute basis. But I think this account has done an amazing job of keeping people calm during this situation. And I want to give them a shout out on here. I'm not sure if they'll ever hear about this, but I think by the time things are said and done, this person deserves an award of some kind for their volunteer work they've done just keeping people aware. So if you want to check out what I'm talking about and what's happening here in Nova Scotia, certainly go onto Twitter and go to that account, Halifax Fire News, @HRM Fire News. But what's happening here is we have two wildfires, well, actually more than that, but two major wildfires that are happening here in Nova Scotia. One is in the southwest tip of Nova Scotia in a place called Barrington, Nova Scotia. And that is the biggest one right now. That's at about close to 20,000 hectares at the moment and burning uncontrollably. And from what I understand, the smoke from this fire is actually being noticed as far as Washington, D.C. So that gives you an idea of the scope of this one. And again, we're not a province that deals with wildfire situations. So scary stuff for people involved with that. Luckily, with that situation, it's in an area that's more rural than urban. And there's been evacuations of people from their homes, about 2,000 people total, but there's been no loss of life and no serious injuries, so which is amazing considering what's going on. As well, closer to home for myself and Jay, without divulging exactly where we live, we're in the Halifax area of Nova Scotia, which is our capital city. We're in the outskirts of Halifax, to be honest, and closer to where the other fire is happening. It's called the Tantallon Fire. And that one is just under 1,000 hectares right now. And they've been, unfortunately, this is in a more urban area, and there's been about close to 20,000 people evacuated so far with concerns about their homes. From what we're told, there's about 200 homes that actually have been destroyed by this fire. Again, amazingly enough, there's been no loss of life, no serious injuries, no firefighters that have been injured or anything like that. So again, thankfully, God's looking out over everybody and taking care of everybody, but it's just amazing. But for sure, both myself and Jay were in an area that we were basically about 5 kilometers, a little less than 5 kilometers from the latest evacuation area, which for our American listeners is about 2.5 miles, a little less than that. And so, we figure we were next on the on the list for the area that would be evacuated. Jay's in his apartment in one side of this area, and I'm in my house on the other side. So we're figuring we're next to go. But luckily, it sounds like the one that's closest to us has been gotten under control a little bit more. And so it looks like we're good to go. And the best news of all is that they're expecting rain to come tomorrow evening, which would be Friday, and then go through the weekend and for a couple of days through the week, which should really help the efforts of the firefighters, who I just also wanted to give a shout out to on this episode, because the work that these firefighters do is just amazing. And they put their lives on the line and battling these blazes, you know, going in the morning, not knowing if they're coming back in the evening is pretty crazy and pretty brave on their part. And the fact that we haven't had any loss of life and all the emergency services that are working together to get people evacuated and all this stuff is just a tremendous effort. And also just Nova Scotians, period. I mean, one thing that's about us, it seems like when there's a major event going on or a tragedy happening, that's when Nova Scotians step up and you know, really shine through. And that's happening once again as people are really supporting all those folks that have been affected by this fire. So amazing stuff. So I'm not coming on here to try to get any sympathy or anything like that. Or I just wanted to give an update on what's happening here and asking, you know, I'm a believer in positive energy and people send out positive vibes. So if you're a listener of this podcast and you want to send some positive vibes out to Nova Scotians, especially the ones affected by this tragedy right now, and of course people all across, you know, Canada, United States, and the world, you know, send that positive energy and hope for the best for everybody. Myself and Jay, we're doing fine. We're safe and sound, and our families are safe and sound, so no worries there. But like I say, I just wanted to take this time just to give the update and shout out the tremendous individuals that are doing such a great job of taking care of things in this situation. So on that note, thanks for indulging me for that. And hopefully by the next week that we're talking, we've had a ton of rain. The fires have been controlled and put out and things are all good. And we'll continue to move on and talk about wrestling. But thank you for that. And let's keep our fingers crossed that we get the wet weather this weekend.
Are you ready?
Welcome everybody to Wrestling with the War!
All right, folks, thanks a lot for indulging me on that cold open there at the beginning of the show. Like I say, some strange times going on here in Nova Scotia, but we're going to get through and we're going to be fine and things will keep moving forward. But I know what you're here for. You're here to talk about pro wrestling and to talk about wrestling from the 1990s and the Attitude Era and all that great stuff. So let's do that. So this episode, we're going to be focusing on, as I mentioned, the January 22nd, 1996 episodes of Nitro and Raw, as we're leading into Clash of Champions for WCW, and we're coming off a Royal Rumble for WWF. So to start off with, we'll talk about Nitro and this go-home show, I guess you'll call it, for Clash of Champions. Clash of Champions happening on a Tuesday, this Nitro happening on a Monday. So just a couple of highlights from this show. We had the first introduction of Conan as far as seeing him on WCW television right off the get-go as they're doing their opening for the show with The Brain and Eric Bischoff and Mongo. Conan interrupts and comes up on the stage to mention that he's going to be defending his Mexican heavyweight title against Psicosis at Clash of Champions. So we're in for a treat as a, you know, that's one thing that WCW was great at, was introducing their audiences and North American audiences to this Lucha Libre style. And we're starting to see that effect with some of the wrestlers that are coming in. So this is going to be a real different experience for some fans who've never had a chance to check out this stuff that, you know, from AAA and from CMLL and all that stuff. So Great way to start things off and get people intrigued about it. We had Macho Man Savage coming out with a bevy of lovely ladies that included that was led by Linda Hogan, and it also included Woman and Deborah McMichael. And that was a big point of contention for the announcers, because Macho was going to be facing Ric Flair in a rematch for the WCW World Heavyweight title. Of course, Flair being the champ after beating Savage at Starrcade. And the one woman that they were focusing on was Woman in this match. And they're wondering, what was her intentions and why was she out with Savage when she has a history with Flair and the Four Horsemen? But as usual, we got a great match from these two. Flair and Savage work well together. A little bit of chicanery at the end. We had Arn coming out with brass knuckles to clock Savage. But Savage gets out of the way. Ends up Flair gets smoked with the brass knuckles from Arn. Savage then hits the flying elbow on Flair. Hogan comes out to get rid of Arn. And we got a new champ. Macho Man Randy Savage has regained the World Heavyweight title. And nobody can be more happy about that than, of course, Hulk Hogan. As Hulk Hogan jumps in the ring, much like he did at WrestleMania 4, kind of stealing the spotlight a bit from Mr. Savage. I just wish Randy would get one championship win where he gets to celebrate on his own and just be in the spotlight. But yeah, Hogan celebrating much like he won the championship. And then Mean Gene jumps in the ring to talk to Savage and Hogan about this. And even Savage points out Mr. Hogan's excessive glee about this win. And there's kind of the thought that maybe Hogan thinks he'll have an easier time with Savage if he challenges him for the match, for the belt. I don't know. Maybe that's where they're going with this. But in the end, Hogan does challenge Randy Savage for the title and says he wants a match with him. And Savage says, once again, he's not Nick Bockwinkel. He's not the one that's making the matches. But he says, you know, he's more than willing to face Hogan. The fans are actually booing Hogan a bit because this is kind of a heelish move and kind of a dinkish move for him to do to Mr. Savage at this point after he just won the match. But yeah, Savage says that if Hogan wins, he's the better man and he will shake his hand at the end of the match. And if Savage wins, he expects Hogan to do the same. So building up some intrigue as to whether we're going to have another clash with Hogan and Savage, much like the Mega Powers exploding in the past. Speaking of the Mega Powers, we're going to have a bit of a throwback to the Mega Powers, a Clash of Champions, because it's been announced the lovely Miss Elizabeth is going to accompany the Mega Powers to the ring in their match, their tag team match at Clash of Champions tomorrow evening. The match being against Flair and the Giants. So I'm not even sure when the last time Savage and Elizabeth, I guess that would have been WrestleMania 7 when she came into Randy's rescue after Sherry jumped him in that retirement match against Ultimate Warrior. So we're talking 5 years since they were last seen together. And of course, at this point, I believe they are divorced, if I'm not mistaken. So big coup for WCW yet again, getting another throwback from the 80s from the WWF. So yeah, we'll see what happens at Clash of Champions. We also had a match with Dean Malenko versus Brian Pillman. Pillman being crazy as usual. He got a win over Malenko. We're talking about also Sherry, Essential Sherry and Colonel Parker. Well, I guess Sister Sherry at this point because she's with Harlem Heat. But Colonel Parker are getting married at the Clash of Champions. And trust me, this is going to play a big part at the Clash of Champions when we get to that discussion. If Elizabeth wasn't enough for the Mega Powers, Kevin Green from the Pittsburgh Steelers, soon to be in the Super Bowl against the Dallas Cowboys, is going to be joining the Mega Powers to be by their side. So they're really loading up the Mega Powers side against poor Flair and Giant, but we'll see what happens. So after that, we had a Harlem Heat match without Sherry as she's preparing for her wedding with Colonel Parker in a match versus Sting and Luger for the tag team titles. Quick note for an update on the Sting hair turn. The blonde is 95% gone from Sting's hair, just a little bit of frosted tips left over. So we soon should see dark-haired Sting, which of course is going to lead to an even more fun Sting when he turns into Crow Sting. Great match once again between these two teams. Booker T just ridiculously athletic here, some of the stuff that he's pulling out. As we know, Sting and Luger, who's on what side, who's heel, who's face here? Sting's kind of being a little bit of a, let's face it, being a little bit of a dummy here, not realizing Luger's being a heel. But throughout the match, Luger plays it straight until towards the end, Jimmy Hart comes out to ringside, jumps up onto the ring apron and says something to Luger and then hands him a roll of coins, which he uses to knock Stevie Ray out with, which for some reason, referee Nick Patrick completely ignores, even though they're rolling all around the ring, and pins Stevie Ray, and we've got new tag team champs. And Sting's a little bit confused, but at the end, he's celebrating too, not realizing that his partner just clocked Stevie Ray with the roll of coins and did a heel move, even though, again, there's a ton of coins all over the ring. So we're just, you know, we're just going to ignore that. We're going to ignore that fact and just move on, you know, because we got to go with the storyline. After that, we had Hulk Hogan versus the One Man Gang, your newly minted U.S. champion after winning the title from Suzuki at Starrcade in a dark match. So this was just your typical Hogan versus a monster heel match. Hogan gets beat up for about 5 minutes, makes the comeback, hulks up, gets the pin. After the match, the Dungeon and the Horseman each jump Hogan, but Savage helps fight them off. The Giant wants in, but the Zodiac's holding him back. The Zodiac is starting to get a little bit confused about things as well. And then once again, Mean Gene, the hardest working man in wrestling television, jumps in the ring with Hogan and Savage again, because we haven't had enough Hogan Savage in this evening. And basically, they just promote the Clash of Champions and the match is going to be happening. And that closes the show. So episode. Intrigue, because we got the introduction of woman back into things. We were talking about Elizabeth joining the Mega Powers for the Clash. We had the title change with Sting and Luger, but not the best episode, to be quite honest. But yeah, let's move on. We're going to go to Raw from that same time period. That's January 22nd. And as we mentioned before, Raw in 1996 feels a lot different than Raw in 1995. And right off the get-go, we have Sonny, because if you're going to go Attitude Era, let's go Sonny. And yeah, Sonny is playing pool in lingerie to open up the show. This is, I think, the exact same clip that we saw either at Royal Rumble or at a previous Raw. But yeah, they're going full bore with Sonny. Coincidentally, if you're a fan of Dark Side of the Ring, the latest episode has just been released, and it's talking about Chris Candido and Sonny, but really focusing on Candido, who always gets lost in the shuffle of the whole relationship. So go check that out, because from what I understand, it's a great episode. I haven't seen it yet, but it should be really good. We then get Vincent King recapping Royal Rumble. We have a match between Savio Vega and Vader, and this is really, if you're a fan of Raw and you remember back to some of the key moments of Monday Night Raw, this is one of them, as Vader basically destroys Savio Vega, and then after the match, he continues to wreak havoc. So Gorilla Monsoon comes out and tries to get him to calm down. Vader, of course, doesn't. So Monsoon suspends him indefinitely, which causes Vader to go off the chain and attack Monsoon. Although, ironically enough, Gorilla starts fighting back a little bit, throwing some chops into Vader, pushes him back. And then he goes back to check on a referee that Vader had basically squashed, not nearly killed. And Vader then proceeds to jump Gorilla Monsoon. Even Vader bombs him, which was pretty crazy to see, because Gorilla, is getting up there in years at this point. And then something you don't see him wrestling often enough: the good guys came out of the dressing room to rescue Gorilla Monsoon instead of, you know, the Stooges or the referees. It was Shawn and Razor that came to the rescue, which chased Vader off, which I wish we had a little bit more of that in today's wrestling, because it's a lot more believable that these guys could come in and stop something that was happening in the ring, as opposed to a bunch of useless suits just standing around waving their arms and begging, you know, a Brock Lesnar not to do something crazy. So it was, I'll say this, it was a great segment to get Vader over. He looks like a beast, like he's insane, just everything. So that was very well done, and we'll see more from that later on the show. We also had a great matchup between two Click members as Hunter Hearst Helmsley faced Razor Ramon. Of course, Razor had lost his Intercontinental title to Goldust at Royal Rumble, so this is just a one-on-one match. And this is interesting because it's the first time that Hunter Hearst Helmsley comes out with a valet on his side. And I'm sorry, I forget the name of her, but so this will be an ongoing thing with Hunter that's going to lead to a few different scenarios. One being a situation with Mark Merrow, who's going to be coming to WWF pretty soon, as well as the introduction to China by his side. So here's where it all started. It was January of 1996. The match goes for a good pace, and then all of a sudden, 1-2-3 Kid, who had done an inset promo with Ted DiBiase talking about what a crybaby Razor Ramon was, including 1-2-3 Kid having a giant baby bottle and Ted DiBiase having a giant diaper. All of a sudden, 1-2-3 Kid comes out to ringside and decides to stick the giant baby bottle in Razor's mouth. And of course, this causes Razor to lose it, chases a kid around the ring and then back to the dressing room. And meanwhile, Razor gets counted out. So the win goes to Triple H, Hunter Hearst Helmsley. But of course, in this time period, the good guy's got to get the comeuppance on it. So Razor does come back into the ring and he almost gets the Razor's Edge on Triple H. But he sneaks away with his lovely valet before that happens. So interesting stuff. We have another wrestling war room segment with Billionaire Ted. And at the time, Vince said this was going to be the last one. But if memory serves me correct, there's a few more of these to go along the way. But this one is basically pretty funny, actually, because they're trying to come up with some original ideas. And, you know, they're playing the Jeopardy music. Nobody's coming up with something. And finally, Scheme Gene has an idea, but you got to call the hotline to hear it because it's too hot to play on TV. So, of course, they all jump on the phone to call the hotline. So, well done, WWF. They're putting it to their old boy, Mean Gene, there with his hotline stuff. After that, we go to an in-ring interview with Vince and Shawn Michaels. And Shawn's talking about his win at Royal Rumble. But before he goes on to WrestleMania to face the champ, which is Bret Hart at this time, he wants to call out another Hart, and that's Owen Hart, because he owes him for going around claiming that he put him out of action with a concussion. So he doesn't get Owen, but Jim Cornette comes out. And, you know, it's funny because Cornette comes out to face Sean, but it looks like Vince becomes Sean's hype man, really, really being not being too impartial here. Cornette's got some good arguments as to why his man Owen should get a shot at Shawn Michaels, since he did put him out of wrestling for that while. So Shawn says, yeah, come on, let's go. Let's have a match. And Cornette refuses, but Shawn says he'll give anything to fight Owen. And Cornette, of course, goes, anything? Well, I've got an idea. So why don't you put your Mania title shot on the line? Shawn hesitates at first, but eventually agrees after a little chatting from McMahon. So we're going to have a matchup, I believe, at the next In Your House. That's going to be Shawn Michaels against Owen Hart for the main event spot at WrestleMania. So interesting way to keep things running with Shawn before his matchup with Bret. And from there, we have a Goldust versus Bret Hart match. Of course, Goldust with Marlena now, and they now have announced that her name is Marlena. Bret was sporting a nasty shiner in this match from his matchup the previous night with The Undertaker. It was a very quick match, and surprisingly, Bret gets the win with the sharpshooter. Not that it's not a surprise that Bret's going to win, but Goldust is only early in his run, and he's been quite the character and doing very well. And of course, wins the Intercontinental title, and all of a sudden he's dropping a quick loss to Bret. But so not sure why they went with that route, but they decided to. It would have been made more sense for him to not lose until he actually loses the title. But I don't know. Interesting booking. And then after that, Vince gets in the ring with Bret, and Bret calls out Diesel, and he wants to face Diesel as soon as possible. So, and we're going to have that at In Your House, and it's going to be in a steel cage, which is going to be an interesting match. All right, from there, we're going to the Clash of Champions 32, January 23rd, 1996. And for you fans of WCW, the Clash of Champions was always a great show. Kind of lost its luster at this point. It just seemed like maybe a glorified version of Saturday Night's Main Event, as opposed to the massive, almost pay-per-view feel of this show. And this one, for sure, definitely felt very Saturday Night's Main Event-ish. We have a recap of the Nitro episode with Tony Schiavone, and then we get Tony and Brain on commentary. And then right away, we're going over to the Little White Chapel in Vegas, because that's where they're at, in Las Vegas. And Mean Gene is stationed there for the Colonel Parker and Sister Sherry wedding. So that's going to be the running theme through the night. After that, we go to the ring, and it's a matchup between Public Enemy and the Nasty Boys. And, of course, we're watching this on Peacock. So Public Enemy's entrance just hits a little bit differently when they use the crappy dub music as opposed to the original music that they came out to the ring to. Yeah, this one's just a straight up brawl. No rules, no nothing. It's a hardcore match, basically. Sags, he gets a table. They brawl a bit more. Ref calls for the bell when the Nasty set up the table ring, which I'm not sure why, because he allowed them to bring the table into the ring, allowed them to do all the kinds of brawling outside the ring. But yet, as soon as the table gets set up, not even used, but just set up, he calls for the ring bell. It turns out that Rocco Rock ends up splashing Brian Knobs on the table, which barely breaks because it's one of those hardcore old school tables as opposed to the flimsy ones that I think they pre-cut at this point. But in frustration, Sags picks up the table and tosses it directly at Johnny Grunge's head on the outside. That this got the biggest pop from the crowd because it was insane looking. He just fired it at Grunge, hit him in the head with the table. The table finally gets broken. And then he chases Grunge off with a piece of the table. And yeah, it's Public Enemy and Nasty Boys. Never been a massive fan of either of these teams, but it's a sign of things to come as far as some of the different match styles that are going to be happening in both WCW and WWF. You're going to see the ECW influence on things very shortly. Then it's off to an interview with Eric Bischoff. He's up on the ramp area with Flair, the Giant, and Jimmy Hart. And pretty typical stuff from Flair with his boy, the Jai, as the boys from Gorilla Brain podcast would call it. Yeah, just promoting the match. Then it's Dean Malenko against Alex Wright. This is a really good match. Great back and forth action. Bobby the Brain was really putting over Dean Malenko in this match. He's been putting him over since he arrived on the scene, which is shows that Bobby's a big fan. Malenko gets a clean pin, although weirdly Randy Anderson screwed up the count somehow. I'm not even sure. It's like he did a double tap at one point and then didn't do a three count. It was just strange. But their winner is Dean Malenko. After that, we have Kevin Sullivan versus Disco Inferno, except Mr. Inferno is a little preoccupied as he is currently at Sister Sherry's wedding. So he sends an Elvis impersonator to do a singing telegram to Kevin Sullivan to tell him that he's not going to be available for this match, which, of course, Kevin Sullivan ends up kicking the living crap out of the impersonator, who I'm not even sure who it was, some wrestler, some jobber for them. But yeah, so no match between D.I. and Kevin Sullivan, which is a shame. Then we're back to the wedding, and it's Gene interviewing the arriving Bunkhouse Buck and Dick Slater. And as I mentioned before, this feels honestly, this feels like a bad version of Saturday Night's Main Event. Just really a little bit unnecessary. From there, it's back up to Mr. Bischoff with an interview with Lex Luger and Sting. And while they're talking, the Road Warriors come out and interrupt the interview, and Sting is as excited as a kid on Christmas to see his boys, the Road Warriors. Luger, not so much. The Warriors, of course, they want to challenge the tag team champions of the world. Sting's all for it. Let's have a match. Luger, not quite the same. He says the Warriors have got to prove themselves, you know, and plus they got a lot of challenges coming up. He names a few teams that makes sense, and then he even mentions the Highway Patrol, which is basically a jobber tag team, which really confuses Sting, and we leave it with Sting wanting the match. Luger doesn't, so I think this is going to be the theme with this tag team going forward with the heel-face dynamic. After that, there's a pretty good interview with Paul Orndorff talking about his career-ending injury at the hands of the Horsemen. Of course, at this point, we weren't aware it was career-ending, but that's what it ends up being. But he's more sounding like he's going to make a comeback and face the Horsemen, and he's really pointing the finger at Pillman as being the real reason for all this happening. So, you know, just an old school guy, tough guy that does a great job of really making it feel real. So, yeah, and of course, Orndorff, one of my favorites of all time. So it's unfortunate this was the end of the run for Mr. Wonderful. After that, right back to the chapel, and finally Colonel Parker arrives, and apparently he's in a bit of a tizzy because he's lost all his money at the casino, so much so he can't even afford the cab fare from the casino to the little white chapel, and he's trying to get some money off of Gene, who of course is not going to give him any money. So a little intrigue here, and also during this interview, Colonel Parker gets a call on his phone, and we're assuming that it's Sherry just calling him to check in on him, but maybe not, because we'll find out later on what's happening here. And from there, it's back to the arena, and finally we're going to have another match, and it's a pretty good match. It's Brian Pillman against Eddie Guerrero, and for all you history buffs, this is a pretty infamous match, because this is the match where Pillman sneaks out of the ring, grabs Bobby Heenan by the suit jacket from behind, and Bobby loses it on air and says, "What the F are you doing?" And it's not bleeped out. I will say that. And even on the Peacock episode, it's not bleeped out, which is interesting. Bobby, of course, had dealt with some legitimate neck issues in his real life and was very sensitive about that. And he had a no-touch rule from the wrestlers. And he was really thrown off by this. You could tell Bobby Heenan is the professional's professional, but he really was thrown off. And you could tell because he finally does come back to ringside to call the match. And he apologizes for his language and for losing it there. And he kind of comes out of character for it. But then, just like clockwork, he's right back to getting in character. It's a quick match, but Pillman gets the win with the hook of the tights. And throughout the match, Bobby is complimenting Pillman, even after this goes on, because he's the heel. And he wants to compliment the heel. He's obviously says that he wasn't happy about getting surprised by him, but he loves his style in the ring. So there you go. Bobby Heenan, man. Just a pro's pro, gotta say. But yeah, pretty famous moment in the whole Monday Night saga there. And after that, we're back up onto the stage or the ramp, I should say, for the interviews. And this time it's the Mega Powers with Bischoff, and they've got Kevin Green with them. Some interesting comments here made by Kevin Green about Liz and who she's going to be going home with that night, and who's going to take her out on the town. And if anybody knows Randy Savage, even if he was divorced from her, I don't know if I'd be talking about Liz that way. But hey, maybe Kevin Green just got caught up in the action and that type of stuff. But anyways, just promoting the match a bit more. And there we have a tag team title match. It's the Blue Bloods of Lord Stephen Regal, not William, Stephen, and Earl Robert Eaton against Sting and Luger. And honestly, this was a great match. It's just an old school tag team match. Regal, of course, is hilarious. His facials at this time are just unbelievable. He honestly looks like he's just sickened to be in the ring with these people. Had a bit of a mess up towards the end of it as Eaton comes off the top rope and Luger is supposed to catch him and power slam him. It gets stumbled a bit, but they recover. Sting comes in, gets a hot tag, gets the win over the two of them with the Scorpion on Eaton. But again, just old school matchup with four pros, and it was enjoyable. Probably my favorite match of the night. After that, we're right back to the chapel. You see the theme here, folks. It's Sherry arriving this time. And Parker has to tell her he's broke at this point, and she ain't happy about it. And she's got to find a place to change into her outfit, and he doesn't have anywhere he can send her, so it looks like she's going to have to change in the limo. interesting stuff. Again, bad Saturday night main event stuff. We go back to Eric Bischoff on the ramp, and he's pimping CompuServe, and then he brings Brian Pillman out. And Pillman threatens to use the 7 words you aren't allowed to say on TV, made famous by George Carlin. I won't use them myself here, but anyways, it is a great promo from Brian Pillman, and he's talking about respect and Kevin Sullivan, and that's going to play a big part in a future match between these two. I won't spoil it, but yeah, respect and Kevin Sullivan. Keep that in mind. From there, it's to the ring for a match, and it's the before mentioned on Nitro Mexican Heavyweight Championship match between Conan and Psicosis. They actually have Mike Tenay join the Tony and Brain for this match because they wouldn't have had a clue how to call some of these moves or what the names of them were. Conan at this point is jacked up, man. Like, he looks like a Mexican superhero at this point. Psychosis with the crazy hair and the crazy getup, but lots of fantastic moves. Lots of lucha stuff going on here, but you know what? There was still a lot of selling also happening, and that's one of the complaints I have about today's lucha influence on wrestling, is it doesn't seem like there's any selling with this stuff. It's just move after move after move after move, and they don't have time to digest the four moves beforehand before you're 10 moves ahead. But yeah, there was selling by both guys of this, which made these moves seem even more impressive. There was an impressive back suplex by Conan from the top rope, where he locked his legs into the top rope and did a belly to back on Psychosis, which showed a lot of power. That was pretty cool looking. And then Conan gets the win with the zip lock, which is basically a modified figure four. And it's, you know, it's definitely a move that could be used today because it's cool looking and it's something different that you don't see anymore. But anyways, still your Mexican heavyweight champion, Conan, without Disco Inferno. Back to the chapel we go for more Saturday night's main event action. And it's Sherry getting changed in a limo. Jean volunteers to walk her down the aisle, and she is just pleased as punch by this offer. We have a ad break for the hotline, and then it's right back to the chapel. So because of Colonel Parker losing all his money, they have to actually get married in the drive-thru, but they don't even have a car to do that, so they have to walk through the drive-thru. So this is just getting into real bad comedy moments. While the ceremony is going on, we find out who was on the other end of that phone call to Colonel Parker that he was sweet-talking, and it wasn't Sherry. It was Medusa. And this is the first appearance of Medusa since she famously, a month ago, dropped the WWF women's title belt in the garbage. But she comes in, interrupts the ceremony, jumps Sherry before they can even get married, and it's a full-on brawl in the parking lot and with two very tough women that know how to brawl. So, unfortunately, yet another wedding in wrestling does not go off with a hitch. Oh, poor Sherry and Colonel Parker. Man, what a ladies' man. All right, so we're going to go to the main event. And how do you know it's the main event? Because, of course, Michael Buffer is in that ring collecting his million-dollar check to do a piss-poor job of announcing the wrestlers for this main event. So it is the Flair, and it is the Giant. And they're with Jimmy Hart, and they're taking on the Mega Powers with Kevin Green, Woman, Linda Hogan, a couple more chicks, and the lovely Elizabeth, who basically is a non-factor in this match. So money well spent at this point. So Flair and Savage start out the match, do their usual great stuff. And then we have the Hogan and the Giant go at it. Hogan slams the Giant in this match. So there you go. That's taken care of off the checklist. The things that the Giant no longer has is a big deal. Finally, at some point, the Flair and Giant, the Giant and Flair get the upper hand. They work over Hogan. Savage comes in, drops an elbow on Flair, but Jimmy Hart is there to throw Flair some brass knuckles. This brass knuckles thing is really coming into play. He ends up knocking out Randy Savage for the win. And then Pillman and Zodiac jump in the ring, but of course, they are useless because, you know, Hogan and Savage can fend off whatever, and they end up fending off the Dungeon. They fend off, you know, the Horsemen. They fend off Pillman, Zodiac, whatever. It doesn't matter. They're indestructible. And so they are able to take care of that little onslaught. And as I say, my last question of the show was, what was the point of Elizabeth? we had more intrigue from Woman as Flair kind of went out to ringside and got in her face, and she gave him a good hard slap across the face. So you're wondering what the heck's going on with the relationship there. Why is she with Hogan and Savage, and more so Savage? Why is Linda Hogan with Randy Savage? What the heck is going on here? Deborah McMichael was with him there not that long ago, another wife of a horseman. So lots of stuff going on. But in the end, I would rate this show pretty bad. It was there's not much good going on. The whole wedding thing just, oh man, that just felt like 1985 Saturday Night's Main Event, just really bad, campy comedy. You could see what was going to happen a mile away. Very few matches, and if there were matches, they were quick. Conan and Psychosis, that was a great match. Blue Bloods and Sting and Luger, that was a decent tag match. Pillman and Guerrero probably would have been a great match, but it was quick. Yeah, so the most notable thing from this show is Bobby Heenan using the F word on TBS in prime time. So yeah, so that'll wrap things up for this episode of Wrestling with the War. Again, I want to thank you for all your support. You know, if you could be so inclined and feel that this episode was worth it, I really appreciate a 5-star review on whatever podcasting app that you're using. If it happens to be on Spotify and you can't leave a comment or anything, why don't you send me an email at bchunterwwtt@gmail.com, and I will read your 5-star review over the air. If it's on Apple, I think they will allow you to put some comments on there, and of course I will read any 5-star review on the air that we get from those podcasting apps. I also want to thank last week's guest host, Kyle from the Apron Bum Podcast. He joined me to talk Royal Rumble 1996. Always a great time. Great guy. Great podcast. Make sure you head on over to the Apron Bump and check that out. And of course, you know, we're going strong with the YouTube. So 2 YouTube channels going right now, Wrestling with the Truth, which is more modern day stuff, talking about pay-per-views, reviews, and different things. And of course, the Wrestling with the Wife segment on there. Been a little bit behind on YouTube stuff because of what's been going on over the last little while as far as things that are happening here that we mentioned at the beginning of the show, but looking forward to getting some more content out there. And if you're an old school fan, check out Wrestling with the 80s on YouTube. It is my passion project because I love 80s wrestling, and I'm loving the chance to go watch even more of it and check it out and talk about it and all the great interactions I'm having with some old school fans. So if you want to head on over and subscribe to that, I would greatly appreciate it. But on that note, I'm getting the cue from the producer, and I got to say thank you very much for joining us. I'm going to let you go, and we'll see you next week for another episode of Wrestling with the War.